This week on the Drag Scene Podcast, we talked to Justin Swanstrom about Radio versus the World Racing, some Grudge and No Time Racing, No Prep Kings, and a whole lot more. So, pull those belts tight. Get ready to put in the beans. The Drag Scene Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Drag Scene Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. Justin Swanstrom joins us this week, and it's a really interesting conversation about his time growing up racing, all the different kind of racing he's done, and how busy he stays in racing as well. So let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Drag Scene Podcast is Justin Swanstrom. What's going on, Justin?
How y'all doing?
Doing good, doing good. Thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it. For those who don't know, Justin is one of the more interesting and colorful characters in the drag racing world. And, you know, you kind of got an interesting start in this whole deal at a young age, right?
Yeah, I've been around racing my whole life. My parents have been in their whole life. So, I mean, growing up, I raced go-karts, four-wheelers, was always at the drag strip. But I actually got into racing, actually getting inside a car. At the age of 14.
Oh, wow. So that's definitely pretty young for sure.
Yep.
And you guys kind of started out. Did you have you always been in the whole grudge racing, no time deal? You guys did some class racing too, right?
Well, no. We started off class racing. We went to grudge racing, and then we went back over to class, and now we're in no prep. I'll kind of go through what all the events, I guess you want to say. But my dad used to – like I said, he's been racing his whole life, so he's had cars. Back in 2007 to 2008, he had a Wally Stroop Pro Mod, so I was always at the racetrack with him helping out. When I was 14, he had already had a little small-tire car. He bought a single-turbo car, was messing around with it for probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 months, and I decided, I said, hey, I want to race. I said, can we get a car? And so we searched around, and I ended up buying a naturally aspirated big block Ford Mustang out of California. So we had to ship the car in. We got it here. It was a naturally aspirated car. At 14, I was just trying to learn, so we didn't want to go too fast. I went out there, did a couple burnouts. I've been around it my whole life, so I kind of knew what to do, but I was never inside a car, so it was a little different. But I went out there, did a couple burnouts. Everything went good. I made my first pass. The first pass down the track, I went 587. I think it was like 113 mile an hour or something. I got out of the throttle. But we ended up graduating, I guess you want to say. I ended up getting that car to go 520, naturally aspirated at like 137 mile an hour. It was a pretty nice little piece. I sold that car and upgraded to a small block nitrous, which was that's when we started running X275. The car, all my cars have names to them. So, that car that I first had was called Hand-Me-Down, and it was just a lot of hand-me-down parts, and I went out there, and I was just learning how to race. And then I got into Bodacious, which was a silver Mustang. I ran X275 with that, and that's when I started to actually get competitive into racing. I was probably just turning 16 at the time, 15, 16, getting competitive into racing. We ended up setting a world record in small block back then. I think we went 467. It was a long time ago, but I say long time ago. Hell, I'm only 23, but we went 467 and X275. They ended up coming out with a class called Ultra Street. We back down to run Ultra Street because there was more around us. There was a lot more races, so it was a 5-0 class. That's what we were running at the time. I was running against Eugene Rodriguez, Walt Drakeford, all them guys, Scotty G. So that was the class around us here in Florida that we would run. So I ended up getting Hand-Me-Down. I still had it. I ended up getting Hand-Me-Down and putting a small block in it on nitrous and ran Ultra Street. Still had the X275 car at the time, but could only run it at certain races. Long story short, we ended up running Ultra Street for a little while, decided that it was starting to get played out and just didn't want to do it no more. That's kind of where it took a turn, and I went into grudge racing. I went to my first race, which was down there. I ran a couple little small stuff in Florida, but my actual first grudge race was at South Georgia Motorsports Park. We ended up going up there. I went up there with Troy Perez Sr. Me and him, we were the two class cars. We went against their two grudge cars, back then. And once I went to that race, we were kind of hooked on it. So we ended up getting a small block out of the car. I purchased a 632 from Steve Johnson. I had ran it for probably 2 or 3 months. Ran that thing for a little while. We went pretty fast. We're in no time now. So we went pretty fast with it. I purchased another motor, just started doing some wheeling, dealing, and trading. That's when we got into the next car, which was Apocalypse. And it was a 91 Coupe Mustang. I ended up putting, it was Barry Mitchell's car. I ended up putting an 872 rear Morrison motor in it. This is probably back 4 years ago. So I got the 872 in that, and that's when I really officially turned to straight no time. Went grudge racing, and that's all we did. We didn't light no boards. We didn't do nothing. We ran a lot of races. We won a lot of money. I took some losses, knock on wood, good thing. The losses that I took wasn't for a lot of money, but I've raced for a lot of money. I mean, I told people, and I'm not too on horn, but, I mean, I've ran for $80,000 pots, like $45,000 each side. Like, it's just that your stomach gets turning when you run that much. And after that race, I kind of realized that there was nothing out there that could ever get under my skin or get me nervous or nothing, because once I ran that deal, I was golden. So I got that car, which was Apocalypse. Sooner or later, we ended up selling it. Just had to upgrade, because if you don't upgrade in the racing world, you'll just get left behind. But we upgraded to another 2004 Edge Mustang, which was called Armageddon. I ran that in no time for a while. I ran no time for the following year, which was 2017. So going into, 2017 and 2018. Going into 2019, at the end of 2018, I told Dad I wanted to go run Radio versus the World. But he said that we weren't able to do it with Armageddon. So we decided that we were going to purchase another car, and we would run no time for the rest of 2018 and get ready. And in 2019, we will jump into Radio versus the World. So I had purchased a Pro Mod, which was Alcatraz, which that's the car that everybody sees on the internet, orange Camaro. But so I purchased that car. I ran it in no time at the end of 2018. I ended up going to I'm trying to remember all these thoughts, but in December I ended up going over to Orlando Speedway to run No Gluts, No Glory. That was my last grudge race at the end of 2018. We had like 10 races over there. We won a few, we lost some, but after that race, I went ahead and started hitting up a couple people trying to get some sponsors to be able to go run Radio versus the World for 2019 season. So go ahead and fast forward to 2019. That's when we started to run Radio versus the World. I went to Bradenton, which was my first race. I think it's the U.S. Nationals, which is at the end of January. So we ran that. I ended up partnering up with Mike Starbinos. He's a good buddy of mine. We've been friends for a while. He helps me out funding the program. And he's a lot lighter driver, so they were dropping the weights at Radio versus the World. So we decided that it would be good to have Mike drive that car. I had another car that I could go ahead and go race. So Mike has been driving that car basically all of 2019. It's actually down at his shop right now. He's doing things to it, getting stuff made over. I'm about to do a debut with the new car on my YouTube channel here in the next couple weeks. He runs the Radio versus the World operation. I can't get down to that light. The weight is 2250. I like to eat, so I let him drive the car. He helps me out funding it, and we're such good friends that I put a lot of trust in him, and I know he can take the ropes and run with it, so I'm good that way. But that's basically how we broke it down, as in getting to my races and then coming from class to grudge and then back to class. And then coming to 2019, like I said, I had bought a new car, which was a 2011 Camaro, which we call that one Carnage. That's my No Prep Kings car. This year, I watched No Prep Kings last year and decided I wanted to do it in 2019. They did not drop the rules or the race schedule until like last minute. So whenever they dropped it, the first race was May 3rd this year. So a month ago, which would have been the beginning of April, they dropped the rules in the schedule. So I basically had a month to get a car, get it wired, put a motor, transmission, get the chassis set up like I wanted it to, and be able to go run a race, which I did. I ran two races. We went to the finals. We lost to Dwayne Mills both times. That I kind of sat back, me and my dad, we thought about what we were going to try to do to be able to be more competitive in that. Well, they ended up, the weights when we first started, it was going to be 2750. So I would have been right around that weight whenever we first started. But then they dropped the weight down to 2600. So I was rolling into the beams 180, 200 pounds overweight whenever I shouldn't be. So instead of me spending a bunch of money trying to get the car lighter, I said, let's go ahead and sell this car. Let's back up. Let's punt. Let's get another car. Let's get down to race weight. So that's what we did. We ran those two races. I ended up selling the car. I bought another car now, which is, I call that Aftermath. That's the car I have now. And we basically bought the car, got it to the wiring shop, got it wired, chassis done, a motor transmission put in, new rear end, everything, in a week and 3 days. So basically a 10-day turnaround. We got this all turned around to be able to go to our first race, which was 2 weeks ago, I believe, up in Juliet, Illinois. That's where we were at. They asked me if I could be there, and I said, yes, I could. I had 10 days to get a complete car to run that race. So we went up there. We ended up hurting the motor. We had to go home early, but we got everything fixed now. I done went and tested. I'm more confident now, and I leave actually tomorrow morning to fly out to Colorado for the No Prep Kings race this weekend.
Yeah, so you've definitely had a very extensive and pretty colorful history rather quickly in drag racing, which is kind of awesome to see how, you know, it's kind of passed down from your parents to you. And again, it was interesting to kind of see how, like, from my perspective, how you've kind of gone through all this. Because I remember you racing that silver, that one silver, the thing was Bodacious at Ducks Races, and yep. Seeing you, your dad work on that car. And then kind of seeing you guys go into the No Time and Grudge world and really shake some people up, which is that whole scene. I don't think a lot of people realize when you talk about the pots of money, how much can really go into those races and how crazy it is.
Oh, there's some races that run. And I never let money dictate it, because I run pots that are for $1,500, $2,000. But there's times where I feel very confident, and me and Dad will say, okay, we'll run for this much, and that's just how it goes down. I mean, the grudge racing's fine. I mean, I love the grudge racing, the whole No Time world. I mean, I got a lot of fans over there, and they still support me even though I'm in the class racing now. But I had to get out of No Time just because I wasn't able to get no more races unless I was giving up something stupid, and I wasn't going to go down that road. I mean, I'm trying to have fun and make a little money. I'm not trying to just give my money away. So I decided I wanted to go run class. I felt if I went and ran Radio versus the World at the beginning of 2019, I would be able to open up new people sponsorship-wise, which it did. It helped me out tremendously. We were able to pick up sponsors, was able to pick up a mic, and it helped me out. It was in the good for us and our program. Yeah, over here, it's just me and my dad. I mean, we got Mike on board now, so now it's me, my dad, and Mike. But we don't have to hire a tuner. We do our own motors. We do all our own chassis, all our own. I mean, I have Dennis Rogers at R&R Fab that does my chassis work if I need welding. But all our suspension setups, all our tuning, everything is strictly over here with me, my dad, Mike at Country Boy Motorsports. I mean, we don't have to source out to no one. I can't afford to pay for tuners and pay for chassis guys to come and do all that. We've learned a lot over the years. We've upgraded cars. We've upgraded motor combinations. And we're the type where I'd rather go out there and struggle a little bit and learn. But then whenever I start doing good, I get the more glorified of it. I mean, we went that 368 in Georgia, and we were excited about that. We just went 366 up in Maryland. We went 366 up there at 203, almost 204. That's the second fastest Radio versus the World nitrous car in the world right now. So it makes us feel more accomplished whenever you can do it by yourself.
Well, yeah, and I think that also speaks to how you guys operate. And a good example of that was, you know, at the Sweet 16, where, you know, it came down to where your back was up against the wall, and you had to one pass to make it in the show, and whammo, you knocked it apart and put it in there. That was wild. That was definitely awesome to see.
That was a struggle weekend. That was Mike's first race. A lot of things changed. I ran the car and everything was fine. I could go 370, 369 every hit. But whenever I put Mike in the car, it's a lot of weight that just came out of the car. So it changed everything inside the car. You got to change the rear gear. You got to change the converter and stator just because the car completely acts different. So we went over to Orlando before Donald's race, and we tried to test, and it started raining. So we only got one shakedown in. It was like 60 foot. Mike got out of the throttle. So we went to Georgia, very green. Like, we were just going to go ahead and roll the dice, throw it up against the wall, and see what happens. I think we got 10 qualifying sessions, and I believe we either wheelied, kicked the tires, all 9 qualifying sessions. We come up on our last one, and I told Mike and my dad, I said, let's just put everything back to exactly how it is. And what do you mean? I said, let's put everything back to where I would run it. I said, let's put the weight inside. I said, we'll leave Mike in the car, let him drive. I said, but let's put the weight back inside it. I mean, I literally went up in the trailer. I took the wheels and tires off the car, went up there and put my old wheels and tires on. I put my converter in. I changed the gear. I went to exactly how I ran the car to see what it would do. And we had to do that all within, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours. It was our last qualifying session. We put everything in. I put 150 pounds inside the car, and I said, let's just go see what it does. And it went out there, and it went 368 at like 202. And we were so happy inside just because we got into the race. And at that point, we got a tune-up off of it, and we were able to go down to the final four of the Sweet 16 for the $100,000.
Oh yeah, that was just totally wild to see how all that transpired. You just make it in, and then it makes it even more interesting. Now you kind of give the backstory to that, and it shows just how, you know, these cars are they're sledgehammers, but they're delicate sledgehammers, and that very small changes can make a big difference in how they operate.
Oh, it can. If you're not, and we still learn every day. But if you're very green and don't really know, there's little stuff can get you so far out in left field. Like, I'll give you an example. This happened to us a while back, and it's the stupidest thing ever, but it's just when you pick up and you find out about it, you're like, damn, I can't believe it really happened like that. But we were out there, no matter what we did, we were kicking the tires left and right. Just could not move more than 3 or 4 foot off the start line, no matter what. And I ended up finding out that I had a faulty tire gauge, and it was about 3 pounds wrong. So I had 3 pounds extra in my tires than what I normally run. How we realized it was is whenever we picked it up on the jacks, my dad was up underneath the car. And he's like, hey, Justin, come over here and look at this. Look at the tread on the tires. Well, when you blow the tire up so much, it doesn't leave the tire down on the pavement, down on the ground. So it blowed it up. So it was only about 3 inches of the tire touching the track. So three to four inches of the tire touching the track. So I wasn't getting the full layout of the tire down on the track. And dude, all I did was just go ahead and buy another tire gauge, went down to my neck, my actual tire pressure that I run, and dude, the car went out there and ran exact number that it needed to get. But that's just an example of small stuff that you would not really think it would do something that would get you completely in left field. Like, we were ready to just give up just because it just there was nothing that we could figure out and do. We were making chassis adjustments and everything, but it literally just came down to the tire pressure.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, I helped crew in a radio car, and we've been down that road before. We're like, something weird's going on here, and you start going through your mind, you know, obviously we've got everything in the right working order. It's got to be something stupid, and that's when you look over everything with a fine-tooth comb, and you find maybe a bolt that's, you know, jacked up, a rod end that isn't right, something's bent. It's just something small like that that can make a huge difference when you're trying to put as much power down as you can on a radial tire. It's definitely not as easy as what people think.
Oh yeah, it's hard.
And then,
a lot of people, they can just bolt it on and just go down the track, but it don't work like that.
Oh no, not at all. It's why when you know, you see guys that, you know, they try to take a legit pro mod and just throw radios on it and think they're going to be able to do whatever. No, there's a lot that goes into making a radio car work.
Oh, yeah, you got a lot of people. Like right now, my no prep car is set up on big tires and bars, and I'm about to have a real hectic next 2 months, which we'll get into that in a minute in my schedule. But people are like, well, why don't you just throw radios on and come run this race? Well, it doesn't work like that. I got to change transmission converter ratios. I got to change my rear gear ratio. I got to change all the shocks on the car. I might as well just change the housing out so I don't have to keep adjusting stuff. But you got to change the four link. There's a lot that goes to it. Nose percentages, weights inside the car. Now you don't have all the rear weight on the car with the big tires and bars. So now everything's transferred on you. I mean, there's a lot of notes that goes to it. It's a lot more than just, hey, let's just throw a set of wheels on and see if we go down a track because you won't accomplish nothing.
Oh, yeah, and that's what cracks me up when I see people. You know, I like any form of drag racing, and I see people that like to dog no prep racing. I'm like, if you've never been to one of those races, you don't understand. Because to me, it's literally, you know, you see a lot of guys that their background is in legit street racing, and they just got too fast to put something on the – what they built was too fast for the street. So you take it to the track with, you know – basically, you know, like Dwayne Mills put it, it's prepped that, you know, the ways the tracks were prepped 20 years ago with, you know, little to no prep, maybe a drag, and you've got triple the amount of horsepower. It ain't easy to make that work at all.
Nope. I've been to three of them this year, which the Colorado will be my fourth race this weekend. And no prep, I mean, I've done said it on the internet, no prep is one of the best races that we've been to. All the races we've been to from the fans, how organized it is, how the event is ran. I mean, it's up there in the number one of our category. I mean, we love going to these races. That's why we continue to support it and keep on going. But, I mean, they're very good. Thursday night, they go out there and they scrape the track. They put some residue-type stuff on the track, which what it does is it eats the rubber up. And come Friday morning, they'll go out there and they broom that stuff that they threw down on the track. They broom it, and then you go ahead and start running your race. That's how it goes down. There's no prepping. There's no dragging. There's none of that going on. I mean, even when I've been there, I've been to three of them so far. I haven't seen nobody drag a track yet. Someone oils down the track, they go out there, and they clean it up with their little machine, and they take the broom tractor and just broom across it real quick, and they send the cars back down. There's very minimal prep, which that helps out a lot of time-wise, because you ain't having to prep for each class and do all that. But Sam, Jen, Alyssa, and all of them, I mean, they run a very tight schedule, and you better be on your point. You better be on time or you get left behind. That's basically how it goes down.
Yeah, you know, that's the way with Outlaw Armageddon, how they ran that event. I was shocked at how well and how organized it's been the 2 years I went, because they don't, you know, make 9,000 calls to lanes. If you ain't there, you ain't getting a hit. You know, don't care who you are. Sorry about your luck. And what I thought was wild was at Outlaw Armageddon, they would have randomly scraped the track with the little machine that's got the scraper and the propane torches, looks like a broom truck. They just decided, let's throw a scrape on it. So if you're sitting in the lanes and that happens, you know, your data's junk and you got to, you know, tune on the fly.
Oh, yeah. They'll change it all up. Like a couple races, people were starting to guess on the light. But it's an instant green. There's no amber lights, but some people were getting the countdown and they were guessing on the lights, and then out of nowhere they would switch the count up, and then people would go red, and then they got pissed. But hell, you should have guessed on the light. I mean, you got to wait until the green comes on.
Oh yeah, and you know, just the tuning aspect of it, what it takes to get one of those cars down the track that's making that much horsepower. I mean, you look at Ryan Martin. That's a radial. That car's done well in radial versus the world, and he's trying to find a way to get it down the track. And they're still moving pretty good. You know, you don't talk about times, but they're still pretty damn quick cars.
Oh yeah, at no prep's nothing to play with. People try to come over there and think they're just gonna run over the top of everyone. It ain't gonna go down like that. The cars are fast, even on no prep. Hell, even on the street. I mean, even them guys running the street outlaws and doing all that, JJ the Boss and them cars are fast on the street. I mean, you're talking cars that make 3,000 horsepower trying to get down a I-75 and I-95 and all that. So it's very difficult, but people get it done.
And it's cool to watch just the level of driving that happens, because it's hard to tell sometimes how on the edge of those cars, if you're just sitting in the bleachers, you see it on film. But when you're standing there behind a car and watching that thing go down the track, it looks like a sort of like an outlaw sprint car trying to make it down the track. It's just wagging.
It moves around a lot. I mean, it's just you gotta stay up on the wheel and just try to get it on down through there, get your chute pulled out, and try to be safe. I say a prayer before every run, and I go ahead and try to do my best to keep it off the wall and not mess up. Knock on wood, I haven't had no issues yet. If it happens, it happens, but I'm gonna do all I can to prevent it from happening.
Now, you know, you've driven both. I mean, you even ran your cars in Big Tire Pro Mod. Between, you know, let's say Big Tire Pro Mod, Radio Versus the World trim, and no prep, you know, what's kind of the difference in the driving that you have to do with those?
I ran one Pro Mod race. I was new to the big tires and bars, so we didn't do too good. We kicked the tires a lot, but we learned a lot with the no prep car. Sooner or later, I'm going to put the Pro Mod back on big tires and bars and try to hit up a Pro Nitrous race. I mean, that's my goal. But it's not too much different driving-wise, other than, I mean, everything's the same. All the switches in all my cars, everything is the same. I don't like switching out between cars and shit be different. So everything is the same, as in where brake pedal lies, where shifter lies. Everything is where it needs to be. Driving-wise, the radial car is a lot easier. When I say easier, as in steering-wise, going down the track, I mean, the radial tire is an instant stick tire. Once it sticks to the track, it's ready to roll. That slick tire, it does a lot of movement, especially when it grows. I mean, it grows between 4 or 5 inches taller when it gets down to the other end of the track, so there's a lot of movement going down through there. I describe it basically as, if you were driving my Radio Versus World car, you could drive it on one finger and ride like a Cadillac. The no prep car is kind of like a roller coaster. It's going to let you know where it wants to go. You got to try to keep it back in the middle of the track. Now, don't get me wrong. The Radio Versus the World car can't get you messed up, because there's different variables to it. There's no wheelie bars back there. So, like some of my videos, people see me ride a wheelie out. I've drove a lot, so I kind of know what to do in situations. But there, it ain't nothing for a radial tire car to go up on the bumper instantly. I mean, I've seen ones flip over backwards. But with that, not having a wheelie bar in the rear of the car, you got to watch that. That's where you got to start. You got to use your tuning abilities and be able to get around that. You're trying to apply so much power in the middle of the track to get that number. It just go out there and power wheelie. Like some people, if you watch Jay Cox, he's the best about it. If you watch his Pro Nitrous car around the 330, 250 foot area, you'll see the car hike the tire back up and ride the wheelie bars out. See, on a radial tire car, you can't do that. We don't have no wheelie bars back there. So the car will either power wheelie or flip over. With another variable to it is, like I said, the radial tires is to hit tires. So if the tire goes out there and it lets go, it's going to smoke the tires. And if you're in the throttle for too long, you can spin the car out immediately and go into the wall and do whatever. At least with a slick tire car, it's just going to shake and vibrate. Sometimes you can drive through the shake and keep on going. Or it'll just shake your teeth out. I mean, I wear a mouthpiece inside the car right now, but it's a little bit more forgiving whenever it does go into a tire shake. You don't wreck your car or do any kind of damage. Now, when you do a tire shake to a big tire car, it does a lot more chassis damage-wise, just because it's a bigger tire and it's trying to drive through it. It just completely just sitting there putting a beating on your chassis. When the radial tire lets go, it's immediately. It's either going to stick and go down the track, or it's going to smoke the tires.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely kind of it's a very good description of how they can be very different, especially, you know, radials can sometimes feel like you've got a good handle on it, everything's good to go, and then when that power comes in, the car decides, like, it literally wants to try to flip over. You've seen that a few times with different drivers. When the power came in, they pedal it wrong, and all of a sudden they go from being a driver to a pilot.
Okay.
And
yeah, it's sorry, I was talking to text. Yeah, it's It everything, even, I mean, don't get me wrong. When I say it drives like a Cadillac, I mean, I've done a lot in the cars to make it where it drives good, and that's what happens. But I mean, if you jump inside a car with, like, I mean, my stomach rumbles every time I get inside a car because I'm the one that's in the seat. I control everything. I want to make sure I make good decisions. I wouldn't just let nobody get my car. I mean, Mike, he drives a Pro Mod. I would let him get in my no prep car just because I have trust in him. I believe he's going to make the same decisions I would make. I would live to race another day. You won't ever see me out there on the ragged edge trying to completely just wreck my shit up. I'm not that type of person. I'd rather just load it up in the trailer and go race another day. So I like to be able to make good decisions in the car, and both cars, it don't matter what car you're in, something can happen immediately. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff. I've seen a floater break on the rear of a car, and you can't control that, and it completely spins the whole car out. Or a four-link bar break, and it's just some stuff you can't control, some stuff you can. You just got to be able to make decisions in the car, and hopefully you made the good one at that time.
Oh, yeah, and like you said, there's some points. It doesn't matter what you're driving. If something happens, you might not be able to save it. You're just trying to mitigate the damage as much as possible, and that's, you know, just part of the style of racing. It doesn't matter what you're driving. And you kind of alluded to it to a busy schedule and whatnot. You know, what's going to be going on with that? Because, you know, we already know you race a lot just following you on social media. So it sounds like you got a whole lot going on.
Oh, I got a busy schedule next. We've done a lot of racing this year. We just pulled up our GPS. It's on our semi rig. We've drove a total of 22,000 miles just this year going to races. So, but this month, September and October is going to be my two busiest months. But this weekend, which is the 6th and the 7th, we're going to be in Colorado for the No Prep Kings race. This is where it comes. This is where I'm going to tell you about how switching back and forth. It wouldn't be so bad if I was running all big tire events. But in the next 2 months, I'm going to do a lot of switching between radials and big tires. So it's going to be a lot of work. So 6th and 7th, which is this weekend, we're in Colorado. I then have to come back. I'll be home on the 8th. That gives me the 9th to the 12th to be able to get the car completely switched over for radios, because the 13th and 14th, I'll be down at Bradenton, Florida for a 315 race. I then got to switch the car back over to big tires and bars. The 20th and 21st will be in Norwalk, Ohio. I will then come back, switch the car back over to radial tire setup for the 27th and 28th to go to North Carolina. So the next four weekends, 2 weekends are going to be big tire setup, 2 weekends are going to be radial tire setup. So, and I work a daily job. I mean, we get up 5 a.m., we leave the yard at 6, we don't get home till 5. So all this work's going to have to be done at night, and we got to man it out. But that's this month's schedule. Then coming into October, which is the 4th and the 5th, I have a small tire race that's over here in Orlando that we're going to go run and test the 275s on, because I have a real big race going on at Ducks Race for No Mercy. So the 11th and 12th of October, I'll be in Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, to run the No Prep Kings race. Come back on the 13th, 14th, and 15th, I got to switch the car completely over, because on the 16th, we leave for Donald Long's race at No Mercy. And we have a big 275 radial $10,000 grudge race Friday night on the 18th against James Myron.
Yes.
And run the radial event for Ducks Race. And then once I get done with that, the 26th and 27th, I'll be in Texas for the last No Prep Kings race. So yeah, I'm gone the next 8 weekends.
Yeah, definitely logging some miles and whatnot there, and hope you got your your pilot or Flying J frequent rewards card ready for sure.
Yeah. My dad does all the driving. We both got our Class A's. Me and him, we switch off whenever I can. But right now, I stay and work with the company. He's leaving today. He's actually leaving here in 30 minutes to head to Colorado. So he's got a guy that's going with him. They'll switch off, get some sleep and all that. I fly in tomorrow. But he does all my driving. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be able to do none of the racing, be able to do nothing. He's my rock behind the whole operation, and it'll be me and him to the end. I've went through guys. I, I got guys that have stayed. Brian Geisler, he's been with us. He's been with my dad for company for 15 years, and he's been with me since I started racing. He's not going nowhere. I just picked up Mike, and he's showing true that he's not going to go nowhere. So I got a pretty fit team right now, four or five of us, plus all the women and all that, my mom and her friends and all that. But I got one of the best teams in the market right now.
And, I mean, we all know your dad's such a soft-spoken and, you know, very, very quiet character. So I'm sure that doesn't play into any of this at all, right?
My dad's soft-spoken and quiet?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, no, he's not. He's very outgoing. He don't care who he pisses off. I got to get on him sometimes and tell him he's not allowed to say that. Or I gotta look out for other – I got to look out at the bigger picture, sponsorships, and I try not to piss people off because later down the road, we might possibly need some assistance on something or some parts. But he's like, nah, they'll be all right. They got to have thick skin. That's what he always tells me. They better have thick skin or they're going to mess with me because I just like to joke around, but I'm going to dig in them hard. I'm like, all right, well, go ahead and go on with your bad self.
Yeah. Dig in, I think, is putting it nicely. If you mean dig in with, you know, a Rambo knife. I mean, I honestly, I like watching some of his videos he used to put out, you know, the live feeds where he'd be calling people out. I'm like, man, that's brutal. But I'd be just laughing insanely at it because it's, you know, it's, he doesn't pull any punches at all.
Oh, yeah, he's off the chain. No holding back. If he's got something on his chest, guarantee everybody's going to know about it.
Yeah, there's definitely no questions on where you stand with him. You're going to find out real quick, and there's absolutely no sugarcoating about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that I think you've done that's really been interesting is your YouTube channel. You know, I tell people you got to check that out just because of some of the content that you're putting out there. And a great example is, you know, when you're very engaged with your audience, and you did the one where you talked about, you know, the parts you use and what it takes to go radial tire racing. I tell people, if you really want to know the true cost of radial versus the world, check out this video right here because it really breaks it down quite well and everything else that you do on that channel. You know, how did you come up with kind of this idea to go that route with your YouTube channel?
Well, I'm on Instagram. I'm on all social medias. My Instagram, you can find me at Swanstrom. That's SWANSTROM00. That's where my big following came from. Just throughout the years, racing wise, I just hit 47,000 followers on Instagram. So I had a lot of people commenting, talking about, hey, you need to start up a YouTube channel. And I'm not too computer savvy at all. So I had a call coming in. So when people were telling me I need to start up a YouTube channel, I kind of like was scared of it because I'm not too computer savvy. I dig ditches for a living and I push a pedal to the floor. So I decided, said, hey, why don't I branch out and see if I can pay somebody to help me shoot some videos. Well, I got some quotes back and it was just a little, like I said, I don't pay for a tuner. I don't do that. I'm definitely not going to pay someone $5,000 to try to shoot a video with me and have to pay them every time. So I said, man, I finally came to my senses and I sat down. I went and bought a lot. Let me start researching what I'm going to be able to accomplish. So I found out, I made a YouTube channel, found out you had to have 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours before you can get monetized and be able to do that. So I talked to my dad and I told him, I said, man, I'm going to start this channel. I'm going to do it for racing, have some kind of comedy skits in it, which I'm sure if you followed the channel, you've seen some of our comedy videos, but I want to be able to help others and maybe somebody will watch it and say, hey, I want to be a racing fan or I want to get into racing and just help them out. So some of my videos are the price on how to run this operation. I just made a video a couple weeks ago on how to read spark plugs, just trying to help your average person that may not get a lot of help from other people. Because in this sport, I will tell you, there's people will, they don't want to see you do good. And I've experienced that, and I don't want to be that kind of person. So if I can, I'm not going to give you all my information because throughout the years I have worked hard. My dad has worked hard to get that information, but I'll just come up front and just tell you, say, hey, bro, unless you're going to pay, then I can give you the information. But if not, I'm just not going to get that stuff out. I'll help you if I can, but that's just how it goes down. But some people will just give you off-the-wall information, and then you're out in left field. So I wanted to start the channel to be able to help some people out and give them a little info on what we were doing, then plus my everyday blogs, which I've been getting better. At first, I was only doing a video like once a week. I started doing twice a week. Now I've gotten it down to I do a video every day or at least every other day. And that's just the everyday blog, or me doing something stupid around the house, or our type of racing, if it's Radio versus the World, no prep, no time, just trying to keep up with it. I'm actually in the process of buying a street car right now, and just a rolling chassis, and then I'm going to build a motor for it. I haven't decided what I want to build for it yet, but the type of racing that I do, we only get to race once, twice a month. I mean, this month and next month, we're very packed up with races, but our average month schedule is once or twice a month. So with those other weeks, when I'm not doing nothing, it's hard for me to video. So I thought maybe if I got a little street car and put a high horsepower motor in it, go have some fun with it, I'll be able to go to my local Test and Tunes on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, be able to shoot plenty of videos, lots of content, and just get more information out. So that's my goal right now, is to go and purchase something and go have some fun with it. A couple friends of mine, my Mike Starvino, my teammate, and all that, just go over there and just have a little fun with it.
Oh, and that's a solid plan for sure, because it'll definitely show, like you said, there's a lot of information there. And just being around racing, there's a lot of different possibilities that you can go into as far as what kind of videos you can make and what people might not realize that goes into a racing operation, you know, from everything of what it takes to get to an event, or, you know, these pits just don't magically set them up. And you got to put a lot of thought into what goes into a pit setup. And it's just things like that that people don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to everything, the type of races we do. And that's a video that's going to come out here soon. I haven't done that yet. I'll probably do that video whenever I go to Georgia, just because it's a little bit slower process, or you'll be there for multiple days. I'll show everybody how we set up, what we got to do, the tools that I use. I see plenty of people that go to the racetrack, and yes, they may not be able to afford all the good stuff, but if you don't have the right tools, you're already out in left field. I mean, we saved up, we've bought the right stuff, because our operations, you got to have the right tools to be able to work on them. If not, you're pissing up the wind.
Oh yeah, it's that, you know, that level of operation will require that. It's sort of like I was at the U.S. Nationals this past weekend and just watching all the different things that those fuel teams have in their specialized tools. You know, you just can't roll into one of those events without having something like that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, and, you know, the dances that they do to get stuff done, and how they attack it and how they approach it. And it's being a drag racing nerd, it's just watching. It's interesting to watch how different teams and different style of racing, what it takes to kind of get these cars down the track.
It's a lot of information, a lot of test time, and a lot of notes, and just keep on going out there and trying to progress. If you're in racing and you're happy where you're at, you're just sitting there, then sooner or later, I mean, if 2 months, 3 months go by, you're getting pulled back in left field. So you always got to progress and want to be better the next day than you were the previous.
Definitely. I'd like to get your take on a few different things now that we've kind of discussed about, you know, the YouTube channel and your No Prep and Radio versus the World. What do you think of the current state of grudge and no time racing? Because if you look online, there seems to be certain groups of people that claim it's dead or dying or problems, and then the next week people will exclaim that it's, you know, better than it's ever been. You know, being on the inside, you know, what's your take on it right now?
Say that again. You were breaking up a little. I heard the take on the no time in class racing.
What's your take right now with, you know, grudge and no time racing? Because if, you know, if you read it on the internet, of course it's true. And some people like to say that it's dying and others say it's great the next week. You know, being on the inside, what do you see with it right now?
Well, the racing will never die. Guys go down the track, but, I mean, there's always the slower guys. There's different classes. I mean, the racing's not dead. I mean, I've already seen it. It always comes back around. It may be one class may be slow right now and not a whole lot of racing going on. And 6 months, it could be the biggest class on the market. It's just how it goes down. It's all racing's good, no matter which way you look at it. I mean, I throw daggers a couple times at bracket racers and pro mod guys and all that, but all racing's good to me.
Oh, definitely. Like I said, it's interesting to get different takes on that. And one of the events, I like going to all kinds of different events. You know, I've been able to go to some of the biggest, you know, radial races, no prep, stuff like that. One of the things I'd like to go to, like, a legit big grudge race, no time race. And one of the ones I keep hearing about is this No Guts, No Glory, that it's the biggest one of them all. You know, you've been to that event. What's it like at something like that?
At one of the biggest races?
Yeah, for No Guts, No Glory. Is that one of the biggest races? You know, what's that whole deal like?
They're big races. They're fun to go to. If you ever can go to a race, you can hit up No Guts, No Glory. You got Donald Long's races, or you got the No Prep King's races. I mean, it's just they're equivalent to an NHRA race. I mean, they're very fun. There's a lot of people. There's extracurricular activities that you can do at these events. It's just, I mean, I have a blast at all of them. Donald's races have kind of got a little long. You're there for a whole week now. At least with No Guts, No Glory and No Prep, you're only there 2 days, 3 days at max. But, I mean, I still support Donald's races and go have fun at those. You're just there for a little bit longer.
For those that are, you know, maybe just wanting to get into to grudge or, you know, let's just say grudge racing, what are some of your tips on how to lock in a good grudge race?
Call the guy up. Whoever you want to race, you can either make a call out on Facebook, get a dude's number, whatever. Call him up. Get the stipulated for the race. Make sure stuff's wrote down. Get with a DP man, which is a guy that's in the middle that'll hold the money. Somebody, a third party, so there's no he said, she said. You can just stip a race out, get it locked in for a certain time, abide by the rules, and go race somebody.
It's funny you talk about the stips, and for those that don't know, that's stipulations on the race that they'll be, you know, both cars have to sit the same, have the same tire, so on and so forth, maybe a limit on intakes or, you know, who knows what, it could get pretty creative. I've seen some wild stips for races. What's some of the crazier ones that you've seen people try to lock in for?
A couple people do different stuff. I mean, I've locked in some crazy races. I've let somebody leave before me. I have to watch their car. When I see their car leave, I get to leave. That's just giving somebody the break. They've gotten a back tire. I've gave somebody one and one, which means that I stage off my front tires, they stage off their rear, and then that gives them a whole car length ahead of me to start, and then I have to beat them by a car length at the finish line. So,
yeah, it's
I've seen some crazy ones. I mean, that's basically any of the crazy ones that I've seen, that's out there. I've raced them. I've gave people the break. I've gave people back tire, one and one, the clear. I mean, I've done all the races you can think of.
Yeah, I saw one on YouTube where the dude got set out by, like, multiple car lengths, and he was super cocky about it, and he still got drugged. That was definitely kind of – I almost felt bad for the guy, but it was still funny to watch and why you would set someone out that far. You know, it's kind of weird.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, with – you guys have always been into the nitrous deal. Have you ever thought about going to forced induction, or are you guys nitrous for life?
I don't know, man. If I called a sponsor and they want to do that, I put a lot of money. Me and my dad, we put a lot of money into the race program for nitrous. That's just all the stuff we have, all the parts. It would cost a whole lot to be able to just go get a whole nother combination. So that's kind of where we sit at. I don't want to say I'll never do it in life, but as of right now, it'll be nitrous cars only.
Well, in that, and what a lot of people don't realize too is that, you know, when you would have to change chassis and or change chassis around a lot of other stuff just because of the requirements for a nitrous car versus a boosted car as well, correct?
Oh yeah, there's a lot. Everything changes whenever you do a different combination, weight percentages, motor replacement, between a pro charger, blower, turbo, or a nitrous car.
And, you know, like you've lived 1,000 racing lives already and you're still fairly young. You know, where do you see yourself going in the future in racing? Do you want to, you know, just strictly go to pro mod eventually? You know, some people want to race top fuel. Or are you just kind of, you know, happy with what you're doing?
I don't know if I ever got a ride in top fuel or in NHRA. I mean, I would sure jump on it for sure. Yeah. But, I mean, I just like to have fun, race, and hopefully this YouTube channel will kick off and I can do another force of income coming from that, and it just would help me be able to do a lot more racing and get a lot more information out there.
Almost definitely. Well, our time here is coming to the end of the podcast, and I like to give all my guests their ability to do their best John Force impersonation. So, you know, I'll turn you loose and let you give out your plugs to sponsors, social media, you know, whatever you want. You know, the floor is now yours.
Yeah, I'm Justin Swanstrom. I like to thank all my sponsors. I got R&R Fabs, Speed and Truck World, Sand Tough Struts, and Rear Shocks. They helped me out tremendously. Neil Chance Converters. We run Rosler Transmissions. I got Pat Musi Motors. My mom and dad, they helped me out a lot. Like, I mean, they're without them, I wouldn't be able to do none of this. It's a team effort to be able to run this program, and I feel that I have the best team in the industry right now, and we're only going to get better. We're only going to get faster and stronger, so we're going to keep hitting up the Radio vs. the World races, all the no-prep races, no time, and like I said, I'm getting a street car. If you want to follow the YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/JustinSwanstrom00. You can see all the previous content and all the new content coming out. Go ahead and subscribe to it. You can find me on Instagram at Swanstrom00. I'm on Snapchat at jswan9699, and I just fired up my merchandise store at www.swangang.com. You can go ahead and get all your shirts, hats, leggings, socks, all the needs, the whatever you think you want to purchase on that store.
Awesome, for sure. And, you know, one last question I just thought of, you know, that we've got the formality out of the way of you plugging everybody. You know, you've had a pretty big year so far. What's one last big goal that you'd like to accomplish this racing season?
Hit 20,000 subscribers on YouTube.
hit the 20K mark. What about on the track? What do you want to do?
We're going for that world record in Radio vs. the World right now. Right now, the record's a 357, but the nitrous record is a 360 with a 4. So hopefully we went a 66. We were in a little worse air than the record holder it was in, but I hope to get some good air, and maybe we get a little luck on our side and be the first nitrous cars to run 350s.
So we could definitely see a battle of a nitrous home run derby at No Mercy. So that'll give us another reason to check that out, right?
Yep.
So hopefully the piston gods are kind to you and they all stay where they need to be and don't get scorched, and you can make that happen. Again, thank you for coming on the show, and make sure you follow Justin on social media and check out his YouTube channel, folks. You're missing out if you're not checking out this YouTube channel. I'm telling you right now, you need to check it out. But thanks again for coming on the show, Justin.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Justin for stopping by. And as always, may your win lights be bright and your reaction times crisp. Have a good night, folks.